I'm going to move these just in case I have to rest myself up there. I should have taken them when I came down. Okay, I can get up the stairs, and for that I'm counting blessings and counting stairs. Please turn your Bibles with me over to Luke. Luke chapter 8. I love this portion of the life of Jesus, and there are a lot of reasons for it, but one of the most fascinating things is it's in all three of the gospel writers, the synoptic gospels. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all have these stories in the same order. And so there's something very important about this little snapshot of Jesus' life during, and we're just going to call it a week, okay? We don't know exactly how long it was, but there is this snapshot of what his life is like now. There are two things that come out of these stories for me. One is the humanity of Jesus, the fact that we can relate to him getting tired, okay, and weary. And the other one is fear. This whole thing is a story about fear and who you are afraid of and why you are afraid. So with that in mind, let's turn over to Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8. Last week we talked about the two parables that Jesus spoke about and why he spoke in parables. And basically he was telling his disciples that just spread the word, not worry about how people reacted to it or where it goes. And then he told the parable about just letting a light shine and not covering it, right? And that's what Jesus' life has been like. But it brings about some strange reactions in people. And we get this little story about family right here. And let's read it together. In verse 19, he says, "Now Jesus' mother and brothers came to see him, but they were not able to get near him because of the crowd. Someone told him, 'Your mother and brothers are standing outside waiting to see you.' He replied, 'My mother and brothers are those who hear God's word and put it into practice.'" Now, that's all that Luke puts in there about this story. Mark, however, who was there and had a different reason for writing his gospel, tells us that his family had come down from Nazareth because they thought Jesus had lost his mind. They thought he had just completely come unhinged, and all of this stuff with the crowds and the healing and all of that stuff had just, and they were going to come and they were going to rescue him. Now, Luke doesn't tell Theophilus that part. But can you imagine how exhausting this encounter was for Jesus? You know, family, the people you love the most and treat the worst, you know, you know how much you love them, but you also know how exhausting it is to be with them sometimes, and how much energy you put into worrying about family. Well, I think that's why Luke added this little part of the story, because the next thing we see is Jesus wanting to get away. Have you ever had that experience? Yeah. Okay. Within the last half hour, have you had that experience of wanting to get away? When the last day, when the last week, when the last month, have you thought of terms of, I need to get away, right? Remember Southwest, they had the let's get away advertisement, okay? Well, Jesus has that thought, because between the crowds, between the Pharisees, his enemies, between his family, and you gotta love them, his apostles, okay, he needs a break. And that is important for you to know. Because one of these candles represents the humanity of Jesus. I still don't know which one. One of them represents the divinity of Jesus. But if you forget that Jesus understands how tiring some things are and how weary things get and how there are times that you just need to get away to fill your well, then if you forget that, you won't appreciate this story. Look at this story, okay? And this story says, one day Jesus said to his disciples, let's go to the other side of the lake. Okay, now these are the folks that own boats. They were fishermen, right? And we've always told those stories about how, yeah, they left everything and followed Jesus, you know, and what, they gave away their boats or put them in an estate sale or moving sales? No. They still own their boats. Matter of fact, they were probably still making money from those boats, right? He said to them, hey, and before, remember when he said, let's go fishing? And they caught all those fish, and it scared them, right? This time he said, let's go to the other side of the lake. Now, I got to tell you some things about the Lake of Galilee, all right? You might know this, and it may, but you know what? It's one of those that was just far enough, you couldn't see the other shore, where you get out there in the middle, and you feel like you're in the middle. And the fishermen hated doing that. They hated going anywhere where they couldn't see the shore. To just cut across a lake, no. You didn't want to do that. And it was a place where storms happened that came out of nowhere. But so Jesus said, hey, let's do this. And even though they didn't want to and they're not going to fish, they did it. He says, so they got into a boat and set out. And as they sailed, Jesus enjoyed the breeze and the conversation and the good food, the stuff. He fell asleep. Now, I don't know if you know anything about how big these boats are, right? I don't know how well you sleep on boats. Some of you have been on cruises. You sleep okay on cruises? Yeah, those are big boats, right? The other boats, they're constantly doing this. How tired was Jesus to have to fall asleep on this boat? How physically exhausted did he have to be? Well, wait, hold that thought. He says, a squall came down on the lake, so the boat was being swamped, and they were in great danger. Okay, what's it mean to be swamped? Yeah, I mean, water coming over the side and collecting in the boat where it's not supposed to be, right? And it's scary. They are in danger. They know they're in danger. They are too far from shore, and they don't know how long this squall is going to happen. And you know what? It's hard to believe this happens on a lake, but when I was younger, a minister I knew growing up, His son and his grandkids were in Yellowstone on a fishing trip, and they went across the lake in a little boat they had rented, and Jack was the only one that survived that. Yeah, I wouldn't have, you know, you wouldn't have thought, yeah, they're in a lake, right? But no, this stuff happens, and these guys were afraid. And so what they did, he said, the disciples went and woke him, saying, Master, we are going to drown. Guess who's sleeping through this storm? How tired do you have to be to sleep through a storm in an open deck boat where you're being swamped? Do you get the picture how exhausted Jesus is? Physically exhausted. Can he relate to you being exhausted? What about emotionally exhausted from family encounters? Can he relate to that? Yeah, he can. And he does. But now, the disciples, who were afraid to do this to begin with, but they did it because of Jesus, are out there, and right now, they are living in fear. They are living in fear. So I'm sure that they were very, very calm when they woke Jesus up. I'm sure they made sure to, you know, get us some tea or some coffee. No. No, they're shaking wicks. And we're going to drown. What's wrong with you? Wait, don't you know to be afraid like us? The text says, he got up, rebuked the wind and the raging waters, and the storm subsided, and all was calm. Okay. We've talked about the word rebuke in here several times when it's come up. Rebuking is not a pleasant thing. It's if you have ever been rebuked, you will remember it. Okay? It is not something that you forget. And Jesus didn't get up and say, hey, turn it down a notch, wind. He got up and he rebuked the storm. Now, would it have been different if he had coffee first? I don't know. Could Jesus have calmed the storm without rebuking it? Sure. I mean, if you can calm a storm with a rebuke, you can calm it with some kind of gentle words or kind words, right? But this is the way this thing came down. He rebuked the wind and the waves, and it got calm. It didn't like peter out. It just got calm. And the text says something interesting. He said to the disciples, where is your faith? He asked his disciples. Where is it? Is it in your ability to sail? Your ability to handle a storm? Or is it in me? And the text says, in fear and amazement, they ask one another, who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him. They just saw something amazing. All of a sudden, they're safe. And they're afraid. Did you get that? They're not just amazed, but they are afraid. Who is this guy in the boat? We have seen him do some amazing things, and now that is probably, to us, personally, that's the most amazing thing that because we needed it badly. We thought we needed it bad, but now they're not counting their blessings. They're living in fear. They got what they wanted, but now they're afraid of the guy in the boat. Maybe we should have got him a cup of coffee before. It's a fascinating story. Now, if this is how you started your vacation, would you keep going? Would you say, you know what, let's just turn around and go home? But they didn't. They pressed on. They went to the other side of the lake. And this story happens on the other side of the lake. And this is a fantastic story. It says in verse 26, they sailed to the region of Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. When Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. The welcoming committee. For a long time, this man had not worn clothes or lived in a house. But he lived in the tombs. And when he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, what do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me. For Jesus had commanded the evil spirits to come out of the man. Many times it had seized him. And though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken the chains and had driven him by the demon into solitary places. Wow. You ever picked a bad campground? I mean, you know, or maybe a bad restaurant. Let's stop here. Okay, let's get out of the boat. Well, guess who shows up? And guess how Jesus interacts with that person? And now, I've gotten in trouble right here in this stage for telling this story before, even though it's in the Bible. Okay? Because drawing attention to the fact that this is a crazy naked guy who is scarred from the chains and the ropes and all the things that they used to do, and he probably has not kept up his hygiene too well. Probably has not had a haircut recently, let alone a shave, right? This is the kind of guy that is scary. This is the kind of guy that you and I are taught to just cross the street and, you know, go on. But Jesus is doing something. He's calling to him. And he's trying to help this man by driving out the evil spirits this man believes he has. Does he have to help this man? This man asked for help. What did this guy probably want? He wanted to scare him off. Now, here's some things that we know. He's in a solitary place and he lives in tombs. Tell me about what this place is like where Jesus landed. Well, it's probably near some tombs and it's probably out in the middle of nowhere, right? Guess what else is out there? Pigs. A large herd of pigs. And if you have had any experience with farming, or if you have lived in a town, I was thinking about Dr. Greeley, where they had pig processing plants, it's not a place that you really want to be. It doesn't help your property values, right? So this is where Jesus and crew have landed. And this is what their life is looking like. And Jesus is trying to help this guy. Can you imagine what the apostles are doing, the disciples? They probably haven't gotten out of the boat, right? They're probably thinking, hey, let's just go find a different place. You know, maybe half a mile down that direction. Or maybe it'd be a good time to go back across and get home. But that's not what Jesus is doing. The interesting thing is Jesus is trying to help this guy, and it's not working. We haven't seen this before. This is a man who believes, and I don't know what you think about the unseen world or how you believe in evil spirits or what life was like. I don't know. And after my experience in Africa, I don't even try to define the unseen world. I don't know. But I do know that they believe that the reason people were mentally unhealthy or unstable or something was because of evil spirits. They were in possession that controlled them. And this guy was not responding to what Jesus was doing. He wasn't responding. So there's an excuse to get back in the boat, Jesus, right? And go on down the shore a little further. But that's not what Jesus was doing. Now, we do know some things about this guy that you're going to find out later. He's not Jewish. But he's had this discussion with Jesus, and so Jesus finally gets to the point, and he says, in verse 30, he says, Jesus asked him, what is your name? Legion, he replied, because many demons had gone into him, and they begged him repeatedly not to order them into the abyss. His name is Legion. He named himself after how many spirits, evil spirits he thought he had. Now, that's a lot of evil spirits, right? A legion, right? Yeah, it's like a Roman legion. And Theophilus would know what that meant. So what you've got is a guy that's talking to Jesus, but he's not cooperating with Jesus. But now Jesus knows his name. And we've talked a little bit about how important it is to know a name. We talked about that, remember back during COVID when we did the whole Sermon on the Mount so we could look at the Lord's Prayer. We talked about what it means when we say God's name is holy. Because when you, in this culture, when you could name somebody, when you had the name of a deity, you had some power over that person. And I try to demonstrate this in Bible studies with, you know, if I tell somebody to, hey, you, get up and come down here, and nobody does it, and then I call somebody's name, and they get up, and they call, okay, there are some things about somebody knowing your name. But now Jesus knows his name. But now there's a negotiation that's going to go on. Because it says the demons don't want to go into the abyss, into the nothingness, which is what they believed would happen when an evil spirit would go out into the waterless places and try to find somebody else. That's kind of the worldview they have at the time. Now, I'm not saying you have to accept that worldview. I'm not even saying you have to understand it. But this is the worldview that they were living in. And so Jesus, instead of getting disgusted with this guy, enters into negotiations with how to make him healthy again. So, it says here, in verse 32, he says, a herd of many pigs. And by the way, Mark tells us there were 2,000 pigs. Okay, that's a lot of pigs. He says, a herd of many pigs was feeding on the hillside. And the demon begged Jesus to let them go into them, and he gave them permission. And when the demons came out of the man, they went into the pigs, and the herd rushed down to the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. What a sight. 2,000 pigs running down the side of the hill into the lake and bobbing around. And then you had this big bacon sale going on, right? Which really caught the attention of Jesus and the disciples because they got a chance to get, no, wait a minute, they don't eat pork. But somebody was in charge of those pigs. A pig herder. What a great, you remember the story of the prodigal son? Where this Jewish boy ended up being basically a pig herder in a Gentile country. So the pig herders, they saw all this. And they saw their pigs bobbing around in the water. Right? So what do? They took pictures with their iPhones. No, then he says, he said, when those tending the pigs saw what had happened, they ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and people went out to see what had happened. Now, you remember, they were out in the middle of nowhere, so we're not talking about a 15-minute trip, right? They ran, and they got somewhere, and they started telling the story, and they told it over and over and again, and so people said, man, I got to go check that out because, you know, basically I'd like to get in on that pig, you know, the discount pork. He says, and the people went out to see what happened. And when they came to Jesus, they found the man whom the demons had gone out, sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. You remember those stories you used to tell around Halloween when you're a kid about crazy people to scare everybody, about that crazy guy that used to live in this area or used to come to this campground and all this? Yeah. Do you think there were any stories about this man? Oh yeah. That scary guy that lives out in the tombs, the one that has pieces of chain on him because they can't even bind him with chains anymore, the one that just yells at you and runs at you and yeah, he's scary. He's scary. Do you think he helped the property values? No, not the kind of neighbor you want to have, right? You think they'd be happy that this guy is now sane and dressed? You think that that would be like a relief? That now when I go out for a funeral to the tombs, I don't have to think in terms of, I wonder where that guy's going to be. But that's not what the text says. They were afraid. Instead of being relieved, instead of being happy, instead of rejoicing, instead of counting their blessings, they were afraid. Now, they had a chance to talk to Jesus and to talk to this man. He's dressed in his right mind. Is that what they did? No. The text says, those who had seen it told the people how the demon-possessed man had been cured. Then all the people of the region of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them because they were overcome with fear. And Jesus said, no, I have every right to be here in this campground just like everybody else. I'm not leaving. No, that's not what he said. So he got into the boat and left. The man from whom the demons had gone out begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away saying, return home and tell how much God has done for you. So the man went away and told all over the town how much Jesus had done for him. How many blessings? Well, how about 2,000? 2,000 pigs. The only person not afraid in this story is Jesus, and now this man that they used to call Legion. He's not afraid anymore. He's ready to go with Jesus. Wherever Jesus is going, he knows he's going from the other side of the Jewish area. He wants to go. He wants to be with Jesus. Everybody else, they want Jesus to leave. Wow. This story is in all three of the Synoptic Gospels. It's an amazing story. First, it's an amazing story of how your vacation can go entirely wrong, which may bring you comfort anyway, because you might have had vacations like that, where you had great intent to be, you know, renewed, to be recreated, right? To come, but it just didn't work out that way. But what this message should talk to us about is fear and where our faith is. What if Jesus does something amazing in your life? What if Jesus is willing and able to help you with some weight, some sin, some addiction, something that you've struggled with all your life, maybe some attitude, maybe some prejudice? What if Jesus is willing and able to help you with that? Are you afraid? Yeah. Unless you count your blessings, and unless you realize how much Jesus has helped you to begin with, unless you come and take the Lord's Supper, unless you remember what you have in Jesus, then it's easy to keep your minds on something else and not on Jesus, and you will be afraid of change. You'll be afraid. My body is changing. It causes fear. Who do you look to? Well, you look to Jesus, who promises that you're going to have a body someday that doesn't have these kind of problems. My family is changing. My life is changing. My neighborhood is changing. What do you do? You live in fear, or do you look to Jesus and say, I know you said we are like flowers that are here today and are gone tomorrow, and that things change, but you never change. Where is your faith? Can you talk to Jesus? Can you bring your problems to Jesus? Can you let Jesus be patient with you as you negotiate and say, man, I really want to give up this prejudice, but this is the way my family's been, this way I've always been, and I don't know how to act without it. So I understand. Give it up anyway. You know, I have a hard time forgiving this person, and I just want to hold on. I want to hold on to this wrong that they've done me, and I don't know what would motivate me or how I would act around them if I don't hold on to this. And Jesus would listen to you and say, yeah, I understand, but forgive him anyway. You can do this. We'll do it together. And then you can count your blessings and live a life of courage, not fear. So we come to give each other courage, because what's natural for us is fear. As we take the Lord's Supper and we remember a little bit of bread that represents the body of Jesus, that he knows. He knows what it's like to have a body. He knows what it's like to be weary. He knows what it's like to have family problems. He knows what it's like to have a bad vacation. He knows what those things are like. That he can relate to you. And we take a little bit of juice that represents the blood, the life, the very life of Jesus, to remember that he took that life and he laid it down for you. Nobody took it from him. He laid it down so you can count all of your blessings of what you have in Jesus. So,